Welcome to the Fearless Beauties Podcast, a space dedicated to shattering beauty standards and celebrating the diversity of the industry. On season 5, we're getting back to our roots with a focus on education on treating melanin-rich skin. We'll be interviewing beauty school owners, entrepreneurs, and instructors as we amplify voices of color, sharing stories of innovation, inspiration, and empowerment. So settle in and get ready to be inspired. Welcome back to Season 5, Episode 8 of the Fearless Beauties Podcast. On today's episode, we are talking all things educating excellence with Anthony Civitano. I am your host, Alina Velez.
And I'm your co-host, Asia Lowe.
And we just want to welcome Anthony to the show. Thank you so much for being here with us today, Anthony.
Well, thank you, ladies. It's my pleasure.
Awesome, awesome. Well, hey, before we dive into some really interesting questions, because you have a really unique background, I'm just going to share with our listeners your bio that you sent over. So, Anthony Civitano is a distinguished leader in the professional beauty and beauty education industries with decades of executive experience. As a licensed New York State cosmetologist, he built a successful portfolio of 3 salons in New York before expanding into beauty education, where he owned and operated 8 cosmetology and aesthetic schools across New York and Florida. Currently serving as president and vice chair of the board at the Salon Professional Education Company, Civitano oversees the official franchising operations for L'Oreal and Redken's network of over 30 schools nationwide. His expertise extends to legal matters, where he serves as a forensic expert in beauty-related litigation for both plaintiffs and defendants. Throughout his career, Civitano has held numerous leadership positions in industry organizations, including a 13-year tenure as an executive board member of the American Association of Cosmetology Schools, where he also served as interim executive director during the COVID-19 pandemic. His commitment to beauty education is further demonstrated through his role as president and executive director of the New York State Beauty School Association. What an absolute powerhouse, Anthony. Gosh, that's incredible.
It sounds a little more glamorous than it is.
We're so excited to have you.
So, first question we want to just dive into, really curious, can you share a little bit more about your legal background and forensics expertise?
Yeah, that actually came out of nowhere. It came from my LinkedIn profile that I owned salons. I was a licensed hairdresser and owned schools, where an attorney had reached out to me for some litigation in a salon. And I found it intriguing, right? So it was to review the standard operational procedures in a salon. So standard of care, you know, how a shampoo may be done or a haircut or hair color, to make sure that the operator, whether it was for the defense or the plaintiff, did everything that they were supposed to during protocols. So once I got into it, it was really cool. It paid really well. First of all, it was like $300 an hour. And I just found it exciting, and it was just cool to watch. And it also gave me some insight on how to better educate my salon employees, and probably more importantly, my students, of the pitfalls of not following, you know, SOP, standard operating procedures.
Interesting. Interesting. So did you work pretty close with lawyers and things?
Yeah, so they you know, I don't have any legal background, I don't have any legal training. They just really want to know from my license, from my experience working in a salon, owning a salon and owning a school, that I follow the protocols that are set forth in each state with each license to make sure that everything was done appropriately in the right way. And then that's how the lawyers then look for breaks in that to, you know, either litigate or defend either way. So, it's really, I'm looking at it purely from a hairdresser's point of view, and then they take it and they legalize it.
That is so fascinating.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Going into our next question, what was the biggest hurdle while building your three successful salons in New York? Did you have any mentors or support while you were doing that?
Yeah, I did. So first I want to say that not all three of them were successful.
I love the transparency. No, we love this.
I am absolutely, I'm keenly aware of my failures much more than my successes. So my first mentor is my dad. I'm a second generation licensed hairdresser. My dad was a hairdresser before me. My mom was a hairdresser. My brother and my sister both went to beauty school and worked for a time in the industry as well. So I you could say my family was my original mentors, my dad especially. He won best hairdresser in the world 3 years in a row at the International Beauty Show.
Wow, that's amazing.
Unfortunately, I did not inherit his talent and skill, but I did inherit his exuberance and desire to be an entrepreneur. So that's where that came from.
Interesting. What a family legacy.
My biggest hurdle is probably staffing, to be honest with you, and I think that probably still holds true for today. It's just getting the right people, the right culture, the right motivation for the employees today. So that rang true then, and it still rings true today.
Mm-hmm. Of those three salons, how many are still upstanding?
The last one was just sold last year. I had a business partner that was actually one of my first beauty school students from almost 25 years ago, when I bought my first school, or 30 years ago now, I guess. We remained friendly, and she had a big salon here in New York, sold it, kind of was doing her own thing, kind of bouncing around from salon to salon, and she said, "Hey, do you know anybody that would want to invest in another salon? I want to make it kind of small and boutique-y." And her last name was Bonte, so we made it Salon Bontique, funny enough. We just sold it last year. She's moving on. She wants to get into the education field as well. So it was time for her to get out from behind the chair and kind of move on. So it was, just last year we sold it off. It's still open. And it's only a 6-person salon. You know, it's very difficult to have large commissioned salons in today's atmosphere. That's why we kept it boutique-y.
What do you think the biggest challenge is with having a big team with that setting?
So, I think the biggest challenge has been booth renting and the suites, right? Like everybody thinks that they can just automatically be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
A lot of people can, right? It's a great opportunity. I mean, that's why I love this industry. That's what attracted me to this industry is literally how hard I work is going to dictate the return I'm gonna get on my investment. So the harder I work, the more money I can make. If I want to work 7 days a week, I'm going to earn 7 days a week, of money. If I only need to work 2 or 3 days to support my lifestyle, I can do that as well. So I think that's the biggest challenge right now is people thinking it's easy to just go own your own business. And then when they go into the suites, and I'm not slighting the suites because I think they have a value add of their own. The problem is that when you see newer people getting into the industry and think, oh, I don't want to go work for somebody. I can just go work in a salon. They don't know how to read a lease. They don't know where to buy their products. They don't know how to buy the products. They haven't built a book of business yet. You know, there's so many pitfalls that they don't see that you get to experience when you go work in a commissioned salon. And you can either then determine, you know what, I want to be like my boss and go on and open my own space and create my own culture. Or you could just say, you know what, that looks a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. So I think I'm fine with just being here at my commission salon.
People don't realize how much effort and hard work they have to put into it. So that's so true.
And a lot of the time too, your first year, sometimes 2-3 years into business, you're barely breaking even. As an entrepreneur, and that's just kind of the the journey that you have to take in building and building your business, putting the time and work in. Well, let's switch gears to kind of more beauty education, innovative approaches. So could you share some innovative approaches that maybe you've seen or been a part of in the beauty education world?
Yeah, so that's why I'm so proud to be where I am at Spec, the Salon Professional Education Company. It's funny, if you would have asked me 10 years ago, would I work with a branded or product-aligned company, I would have said you were crazy. I would have said no way, because as an educator, I always felt like color is color and I should teach the theory of color, right? And then my students can graduate and go out and work with any product line. And I still hold that very dear, near and dear to my heart. But with the Salon Professional Education Company, aligning ourselves with L'Oreal and Redken has proven to be such a game changer, not only because I believe in the products, but I also, the education that they help us with is amazing. But the secret sauce that we have within our schools, which are, you'll know them more out in the industry as the Salon Professional Academy, which are the Redken schools, and ESI, which is Elevate Salon Institute, which is the L'Oreal schools. We truly write in our curriculum is totally driven to building your book of business, to upselling the client while they're in the chair, you know, add on color, add on services, selling retail, you know, aftercare for the client, educating the client. I mean, we're not teaching to just state board. Where a lot of schools still do teach the state board and then they graduate and they go on, we're really truly educating these students to build their book of business. So when they graduate, they take their clients from beauty school with them into their first salon. So, you know, we're trying to prepare them truly for success because there's just a lot of turnover in the industry, right? People graduate, it's a hard industry. And if you didn't learn that from the ground level of how to build your book and upsell and get the trust of your clientele when you're offering product advice, it's not about selling a product, it's about giving them the best aftercare products to enhance the work that you just did on them in the salon. So it becomes less about selling product retail and more about the aftercare. And then it's not selling. So then it's more comfortable for the stylist and it's more comfortable for the client. And now they build that trust and that bond with you, and they won't leave you as your stylist. They truly look at you the same way they look at their doctor or their dentist or their therapist. As we all know, they tell us more than they probably tell their therapist.
So true.
You know, I think that's the thing that I'm most proud of with the organization I'm with today. And that's the big innovators that I see in the industry.
That's something just really authentic to stand on. I think, you know, you're not just teaching them the theory, you know, like you said, you're truly setting them up for success. And, you know, it's similar to the aesthetics industry. I think that, you know, we're doing treatments in the treatment room, but, 80% of the results are going to come from what they're using at home. So, that's awesome.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, that's great. In your opinion, what do you think are the biggest challenges and pitfalls that educators make or, you know, run into in their career?
So educators, this is a great question, by the way. It's a big challenge for schools all across the country. When you make the leap from behind the chair to education, there are a lot of things to consider. So, number one, you just heard me say about what I love about this industry is how hard I want to work is how much I'm going to earn. Because that means that's me controlling my destiny. So the biggest shift and transition for somebody to go from salon to education is, it's a pitfall and a good thing, actually. They go from living off tips and did I have a slow day, did I have a busy day, and how much money did I make today, to a constant paycheck, right? So that's one thing where they're, it's a little bit better. They have, you know, consistent revenue flow, but it's challenging for them when they're changing over, because they get so addicted to that cash hit of what I made today, as opposed to what I'm making during the week, right? So that, that's the first part of it. The second part of it that's a plus is, you know, you might get health benefits. You might get paid vacations working in a school and being in education. The downside of that is, though, you do lose your flexibility, and you're most likely going to work a Monday through Friday or a Tuesday through Saturday in a school, because education is all about consistency, right? So if I'm going to be the educator of a classroom, they need to hear me every day for their classroom experience. Or conversely, when they're on the salon floor and they're learning from me on the salon floor, I need to give my students that consistency. So I think that there's two things there. It's kind of lifestyle change, it's monetary change. But then the biggest thing is, we all think we're educators when we're getting into this. And then we quickly realize that students today are very, very different than they were 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. It's just a different generational gap. There is the instant gratification. So, you know, I'm older than you guys, obviously. We got to see each other's faces before we got. I'm Generation X, and, you know, my students would probably look at me like a boomer, and I look at them like they're little children. And we have to find that common ground to understand each other and work within our differences. So I think that's the biggest challenge. You know, older instructors need to embrace technology more. You know, it's beauty school isn't textbooks and workbooks anymore. You know, it's online platforms, whether it's Milady or PivotPoint, that are learning management systems. So the scary thing for an educator is to get into a computer system, where, you know, our students today were brought up with phones and computers
TikTok.
In their hands. Well, TikTok is a huge one. You know, the power of TikTok and the ability to sell and make money. I was just on a webinar yesterday that it was funny. It was purely by chance, because it's a friend of mine from the industry who lives in Tennessee and is, I think, in the top 26 TikTok salespeople in the country.
Wow.
And she made friends with somebody else that's in the top 25 or 26, and that person happened to be one of my graduates.
Oh my gosh.
She's not even behind the chair anymore. She's just making content, and she's killing it. I think she's like between 50 and 100 grand a month.
Wow.
As a TikTok influencer. So,
yeah, that's phenomenal.
You know, the opportunity that they have. But, you know, getting back to what I was saying is I like to think of myself as a little more progressive and still with understanding the youth to a degree. But you get somebody in that's not in the TikTok world or doesn't want to embrace technology and social media and influencing. It's scary for them to get into it. Number one, and then the students aren't going to buy into them as the educator if they're not being, you know, part of that genre or that generation. You know, you don't have to be of the generation to be part of the generation. Is my thoughts, because, you know, having young children, my daughter's 17, I learn, you know, from her all the time, and that translates to when I'm talking to students or younger people in the schools all the time. And, you know, they look at me, they make fun of me. My daughter does too. She's like, "How do you know that?" And I say, "It's my job to know that." And I think that's a big difference maker. So, yeah,
just being open-minded on both ends, you know, young generation and the older generation. There's something to learn on both ends, right?
That's so true.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Let's talk about how COVID impacted the direction of your career and what you did to pivot.
Well, I have a very unique, funny story. So I had sold my schools in 2018, wasn't behind the chair at all in the salon I owned. Well, we didn't actually open until Thanksgiving week of 2019 and quickly closed down in 2020 because we're in New York, and New York was impacted from the disease and the government probably more than almost any other state or country. So what I did to pivot was I was the interim executive director of the National Association for Cosmetology Schools. I left them and I was sitting on the couch. This has nothing to do with the beauty industry, but you're asking the question, so I'm going to tell you.
We want to hear it. We want to hear it.
So my wife is a nurse practitioner. And it was, at the time, she was just an RN at labor and delivery. And she could not stand being in the hospital anymore. Nobody was, you know, the hospitals were greatly impacted with births. So the birth rate went down, or the visits to the hospital went down. Then she got put on the COVID team and she did not want to deal with that. So she went into her colleague went into testing for COVID. And it's a funny story, but she started going around testing people for COVID. And her colleague got into movies and theater and rock concerts, and they hired me to go out and be a COVID tester.
So
I started doing testing, and I wound up on tour with Phil Collins and Genesis doing that testing.
Oh my gosh.
I tested a lot of celebrities. I got to meet Lil Nas X and Sting and the Rockettes, and you know, it was a crazy, crazy experience. It was a lot of fun. We made money. But I really wanted to, I could not wait to get back into the beauty industry. So my friend that I was telling you about before, that I was listening to her webinar yesterday, she works for a company called Beauty School Marketing Group. She said, "Hey, Anthony, can I hire you 4 weekends a year in, you know, this year to come out and introduce me to all your colleagues in the beauty industry?" So I did. And then that led me to an old company that I worked with that created a CRM, client relationship management system, and I helped design it for the inner workings of the office of a beauty school. So they brought me on as their chief operating officer, and then I got back into the beauty school world, and then I called on the company I'm working for today, and they asked me to join their board because of all my insight on the beauty industry and the beauty schools, and then I was on their board for a year, and then about a year ago, they asked me to be the president of the company. So, yeah, there was a big pivot. It was a lot of fun. I had a very different experience than probably, 90% of the rest of the world.
Right.
I got to travel and I had a lot of fun and meet some people, but I inevitably got back to where my heart is, which is the beauty industry.
That's amazing to hear. What would you say are your core leadership principles to help you get where you are today?
So my leadership is, my style of leadership is to be very inclusive, right? I hate the word boss. I actually despise it. I always prefer to use colleagues because we're in it together. And it's all about collaboration. It's all about servitude and lifting up your colleagues.
Right.
You don't need to be the one to take credit for everything. You don't need to be the one to, although I, if some of my friends and colleagues hear this, they will say, "You're full of, you know what, you love to hear yourself talk and you are collaborative, but you are an idea guy." And I am. But I love to uplift other people and help them shine as well and see their full potential. And when you are, I don't own this company, but any leadership role, when you're the people that work with you or for you, if they're successful, you'll be successful. And if you're confident in yourself and your abilities, then you don't have to worry about them outshining you. And if they do, God bless them, and they'll move on from where you are. And you should always want to help other people move on to bigger and better things in their life, whether it's with your company, on their own, or with another company.
Right. Oh, that's great. I think so much in life is a reason, a season, or a lifetime, right? And so a lot of times throughout your career, you might land a job that's just for a season. That's just a stepping stone, and that's okay, right? And mm-hmm. so I think that's a really great mindset to have, that, you know, they will find their way. They will find their way out if they're not meant to be in that space.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, I love that you said those stepping stones and seasonal and journey. If you don't look at life as a journey and experience the journey and love the journey, the good, the bad, and the ugly, you're missing out on what life is all about. That's the reality of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, do you read or listen to podcasts at all?
I do. Full disclosure, I'm a Christian, so I read a lot of scripture, and I kind of put it into my world. And
could you share one of your favorite books? And it doesn't matter if it's Christian or whatever. I love leadership books and just personal development. So what's something? Go ahead.
The last book that I just read, and we actually had this gentleman as our keynote speaker last year at our conference, is The Experience Maker by Dan Ginges. It's how to create remarkable experiences that your customers can't wait to share. So it could be, you know, it could be applied to any industry. We obviously applied it to Behind the Chair. And I think it was just so inspirational and so on point about making the experience happen, because that's where the memories happen, that's where the rebookings happen, that's where the shared experience and the referrals come from. Is if you make an experience for somebody, you're going to create followers wherever you go.
So true. People will forget what you said, but they always remember how you made them feel, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, or even like the environment. I was talking to another local esthetician, and she was just saying how implementing some things into her treatment room, like a heated blanket or a weighted blanket, like they remembered her for that. Like it's the experience or the room. Like it's just so amazing.
The ambiance.
And think about the head start we have as service providers in the beauty enhancement industry. We get to touch people in a way that nobody else does. Your lawyer doesn't get to touch you. Mm. Your doctor touches you, but you're sick or hurt, so that doesn't feel good. But as a hairdresser, as a colorist, as an esthetician, as a nail tech, somebody's coming to me potentially in a bad state of mind or frame of mind. Maybe they broke up with their boyfriend or their wife or their girlfriend or whatever it is. Maybe they got laid off and they're coming and they sit in my chair. And I can do something as simple as changing the arch and shape of their eyebrow. And that changes the look of their face from maybe resting bitch face to more acceptance. And now all of a sudden they're walking through the world and they are transformed from something that I did as simple as changing the shape of their eyebrow. What other industry gets to do that?
I don't know of one.
Not many others, just us.
Yeah. It's a huge blessing that we have to the energy exchange and the influence that we have in people's lives is huge. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, Anthony, tell us, what is next for you and the beauty industry? Are there any projects that you're working on that you'd like to share with the listeners?
Yeah, so with my company now, the Salon Professional Education, like I said before, we're the Salon Professional Academies, which is Redken and ESI. We're out there really just trying to expand. We have 30 some odd schools, you know, nationwide. So we're bringing on new schools, conversion schools. We have a new salon owner in Chandler, Arizona that just signed up with us. She's going to be opening up her school within the next 12 to 18 months. We're converting independent beauty schools to join over and get to learn our forms of education and oversight there. You know, so that's a big initiative. I may buy a beauty school again too. I'm always on the hunt for that. And then the biggest challenge that I'm doing right now is really fighting for our industry. And You can cut me off at any time, ladies, because I can run on this one really long. But there's a movement out there with apprenticeships that are, they are not bad. I do believe in apprenticeships where they make sense.
Sure.
But there's a big movement out there, and with this new administration look to deregulate everything, what's happening is there's some companies out there that are going out to salon owners and say, hey, don't rely on your local beauty school. You should be growing your own hairdresser, and you should be doing it your way. And, you know, the legislators out there are saying, well, yeah, you know, student loan debt, we don't want student loan debt to be too high. And if they can learn through an apprenticeship program, that's the better way to do it. And there is some validity to that in certain circumstances. But there's a big but. First of all, apprenticeships are not for everybody. Apprenticeship training is not for, or being the trainer is not for everybody, right? So when you go work in a cosmetology school, you have to learn how to be an educator. Right. You have to go through training for that. If I am just a salon owner and I'm having a tough time finding somebody to come work for me, number one, it could be because of the culture of my salon. Number two, it could be that you're in a rural community. Or number three, it could be that, quite honestly, you suck at what you do. Sorry to say that, but that's the reality of it.
Right.
And if
right.
you're just now going to train somebody, you're potentially going to train them incorrectly. And what happens is the legislators that don't know anything about our industry are listening to that and say, yeah, let's deregulate. Let's take this license away. You know, in Iowa, there's legislation out there right now that says if you're a salon owner or worker, you can have somebody come in off the street. They can take 2 hours of training, 1 hour in state law and 1 hour in sanitation and sterilization, and then you can work for me doing haircuts, color, relaxers, everything else that a licensed cosmetologist could do. And that's just insanity to me. But there is a big movement. It's called the Institute for Justice and Americans for Prosperity. They think that schools are ripping off students. What I'm going to tell you, I don't know of a beauty school that's over $20,000 and longer than a year and a half. So even if you paid full price, 20 grand and a year and a half, and you're out there and you have an amazing career in a almost $100 billion a year industry, that's a pretty good return on investment. But the reality is there's student loans and grants out there that will offset that. And if you get some grant money and some student loan money, the average student comes out of debt from beauty school with about $8,000 or $9,000 in student loans. I think that's a very manageable debt to have, thinking of the potential you have for earning, the flexibility you have for the earning, and the journey that you could go on. Look, I worked as a cosmetologist. I bought a salon. I bought a school. I've been a global business development manager for Milady. I worked in associations. I've done forensic expert work. I've helped in R&D for different brands. All because I went to beauty school and spent less than, at that time, $10,000.
There's so many avenues. You're not just tied to just, cut and color. Yeah.
You work for a salon distributor and sell products, and you can make six figures and never do hair again.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I know in Oregon there's talks of that right now, and there's a lot of uncertainty with it, and it's a little nerve-wracking because not everyone is built to be an educator. And I feel like that's all I'll say on that.
Yeah.
If you think about being an apprentice, right, or an apprentice instructor, if it's just the two of us in a salon and I give you a client to apply color, and now I take a client and I apply color, and you run into problem as my apprentice, where is my duty fall to? Is it my client or my apprentice and their client? So do I stop the processing on my client to go help you with yours?
Yeah.
Or, you know, what happens there? You know, most apprentice models, like in carpentry and plumbing and electrician, You're working on inanimate objects that you can do no harm to, because no electricity is going to run through it. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to live in that house. No water is going to flow until the master plumber or electrician or carpenter goes and checks your work. Mm-hmm. Here, they're learning on people.
Right.
By the way, what's the duty you have to disclose to your client? Hey, this person's been working for me for a week, and they're going to apply 40 volume peroxide on your hair with a high lift collar.
Sheesh.
Mm-hmm. How scary is that idea?
Yeah.
But you know what happens? Legislators don't understand that language, and it's much easier to default to the narrative of student college debt is too high right now.
Yeah.
And we should be a roadblock mm-hmm. to careers. Well, mm-hmm. I'm sorry. We're not a roadblock to careers. We're giving them what they need to know, and mm-hmm. you're graduating with entry-level skills to be able to go out there and be able to earn a living for yourself. We're making you proficient. It's upon mm-hmm. you to continue your education and work at your craft to hone your skills and be better at it. Plain mm-hmm. and simple.
Plain and simple. Plain and
simple.
Exactly. Legislature, those people aren't, like you said, you know, they're not in the industry. They're not taking all these things into consideration. It's for the safety of the public and everybody's best interest.
Yep.
So,
yeah.
Very well said. Very, very well said. Mm-hmm. Well, as we wrap up this episode, Anthony, can you just share with the listeners just maybe a couple good platforms to connect with you, whether it's social medias or LinkedIn, and what your handle is for those?
So because I am old, LinkedIn is probably the best way to go. It's Anthony Civitano, Civitano. So I would love to connect with you that way. My Instagram is acivitano at Insta. TikTok I use just to buy stuff and watch funny videos of dogs that talk and everything else.
Fair enough.
Or you can email me directly. I don't know if it's appropriate for me to give my email address.
Sure, why not?
Yeah.
Sure. Okay, so it's my personal is acivitano13@gmail.com is my personal, and my professional is acivitano@specfranchise.com, and would love to work with anybody or help anybody in their journey in the industry, both professionally and in the education side.
Wonderful.
Thank you for the opportunity. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, we've loved having you. And as always, everybody, follow us on Instagram at Fearless Beauties. You can follow myself on Instagram at True Skin Lab in Asia.
And you can follow me on Instagram at Aesthetics by Asia LLC.
Awesome. Well, it's been great talking with you, Anthony. Thank you so much for your time. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.